You are listening to a message from Thrive Community Church, a church located in Southwest Florida. For more info, visit us at thrive-fl.org.
So we're in a second of this series in Different, as we look at 1 Peter, a great book, not real long, but we're going to have to just highlight different sections of it because it's a little too much to go through even in a series of 4 or 5 weeks. And if you missed last week, which I am myself and my wife were actually in at a conference in New Orleans, and that is a different place. I used to live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for 5.5 years when I was a campus pastor at LSU. And so we'd get down to New Orleans once in a while and see how different it is. But what was great is to see some of the impact that God had through that ministry at LSU. We were able to be with three couples and meet some of their kids and all, and how God is still working in their lives and how they have been, in a sense, different than the rest of New Orleans. Though they live there, they grew up there, they're members of different Christian churches in the area, and they are making a difference in that New Orleans area. And so it was great to see that. So I missed last week, but I kind of know what Phil was talking about, because 1 Peter was written to a people, the Jesus movement, the early Christians who, well, they were facing a really tough time, probably about 60, 65 AD or so. Many of them had been in Rome during the reign of a man named Nero. Not a great guy in some ways. He, in fact, from most historical sources, there's evidence that he actually burned his own city down. I don't know if you know that. Or there was a fire that happened and then it was put out and he restarted it because he wanted to have a whole urbanization project going on. And then, on top of it, guess who he gets to blame for the fire? He blamed the Christians, the followers of the Christ. So they faced even worse times then, and many of them scattered outside of Rome and went and dispersed from there. And Peter then wrote this book to this people who had faced some real tough times and who lost home and property and everything and were scattered now into the world, and he wanted to give them hope. Hope that, hey, this world, the way it's set up, you were never meant to fit into this. This is not what your home is all about. You've got a God who is going to renew all of creation and bring you home to Him. And because of that, you have different priorities. You have a different way of looking at things. You can make a difference now, and you're going to have different passions and a different way of living. You're going to be different in your marriages. You're going to be different in your families. You're going to be different at work in your community. You're going to make a difference. And he sums up that difference really with one word, which we will read. And that is the word, you are called to be holy. So let's read in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 to 21, where Peter continues to write, "Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.' And if you call on Him as Father who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourself with fear throughout the time of your exile, knowing that you were ransomed from the futile ways inherited from your forefathers, not with the perishable things such as silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. He was foreknown before the foundations of the world, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you, who through Him are believers in God, who raised Him from the dead and gave Him glory, so that your faith and your hope are in God. So the Bible, when it says people become Christians, the Bible doesn't say we just kind of turn over a new leaf or start. The Bible talks about a difference that happens to us, such a difference that the resurrection power of Jesus Christ and himself comes into our life and makes us different. And a word that is used, like I said before, in this passage is the word holy. Now, it's a hard word for us to grasp onto these days because how often have you used that word holy, right? Holy cow, you know, holy, free holies. And we use the word holy in a kind of a negative way, like that person thinks they're really holier than thou, right? And it means that they're haughty and they're arrogant and full of themselves. That has nothing to do with this word, actually, of holy. It's a hard word to get a handle on, and so we're going to look in this passage what it really means in its depth. We're going to learn three things. First of all, what is it? Pretty simple, right? And how is it different? And then thirdly, why be different? Okay, so let's just look at what is it. So Peter comes up and he says in this passage in verse 15 and 16, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, since it is written, you shall be holy for I am holy. Now, what do most people think holiness or holy is all about? They think what church is all about, religion is all about, is always morality. Behavior modification. They're just telling you in one form or another, guilting you, telling you what to do, how to live, whatever. And that's what it means. So holiness is don't do that and don't do this and don't. But you know what's interesting about this passage is Peter quotes in this whole passage from an Old Testament book when he says, you shall be holy as I am holy. That comes from the book of Leviticus, of all books. Did you know that? Is that one of your top 10 reads in the Bible of the 66 books? Yeah, I'm going to. It's not mine. It's a hard book to read sometimes because it's filled with all this ceremonial stuff and all these priestly things and how the tabernacle set up. And I mean, there's some great stuff in it, but it's really got a lot of that stuff going on. So it's not quite down there in my reading with all the begats, you know, all the names and the begat this and begat that. But it is one of those books we kind of like, we don't know what to do with it. Now, what's interesting is in that book, there's a lot of passages on holiness and what it means to be holy. And so Peter's quoting from that, and it has a lot, it has something to do with morality, but it's a lot more than that. So the Hebrew word actually is kadosh for holy, and it really means this, set apart or consecrated or separate. And in the book of Leviticus, the majority of the time it's talking about holy things like tables or chairs or utensils or sacrifices or things like that. So what does a holy table look like, right? Is a holy table a moral table? Do you understand what I mean by that? So, and if what's an immoral table look like? It really doesn't have to do with that. It means to be set apart, to be consecrated, to be other, to be different. Okay? So, if you had a table and you wanted it to be holy, let's say you ate at it three meals a day, right? It was very common. It was used at your home and you wanted it to be holy. You didn't then open up or speak the Ten Commandments to the table and tell it to behave. Okay? You don't say the golden rule and say, okay, now start following it. What you would do is you would take that table to the priests and dedicate it to the priest, consecrate it, set it apart so that it could be used by God for God's sake, for sacrifices, for fellowship offerings, for whatever. And now it was separate and set apart and it was used only for God, exclusively for him. That's what it means to be holy. One commentator on Leviticus says this, these words in Leviticus 11 are not given in the context of moral commands and prohibitions to people, but the context of ceremonial restrictions dealing with clean and unclean things. For, and this is the important thing, okay, belonging to God, living on his terms, reserving ourselves for him, delighting in him, obeying him, honoring him, these are more fundamental than the specifics of obedience we label morality. Being holy means this. And by the way, this is kind of one of our taglines. You belong to God. You belong. You are his. You've been called to be his, separate from, different from, and distinct from the world. God himself is holy because he's in a whole different category. There is no one and nothing like him. He is absolutely unique, right? He is perfect. He is uncreated. He's infinite. And we are called to be holy does not mean we're going to become infinite or perfect in that one sense, like God is perfect or all-powerful or uncreated or different, but we are going to be dedicated to him, set apart for him and his use. That's what holiness is. It's about an intensely personal relationship with your God. Hey, there are a lot of moral people in this world. There are a lot of people that are more moral than I am. And I know it, okay? And there are a lot of reasons people are moral in this world. They follow the golden rule of loving others or doing to others for a variety of reasons. About four weeks ago, I was going to FGCU and bringing my car onto campus and trying to find a parking spot. As some of you know what this can be like during the middle of the day, in the service lot next to the Cohen Center, and that thing is packed often. And there was a guy who was walking out towards his car, and he was kind of signaling me to follow him to get his spot. And I get to it. He moves. I roll down my window. I say, "Thank you so much." He goes, "Hey, no problem. I just want to make sure that the parking gods are with me." And I keep getting the parking karma going my way. So he was being ethical or holy or, well, ethical or moral for the sake of keeping the karma going his way, you know? And there are other people who say, hey, being moral is good business practice, being honest and forthright and hardworking because you get a good reputation. And other people will do it simply because they want to feel good about themselves. So there's a lot of people that can be moral and a lot of reasons. And you can be, in a sense, moral in this worldly sense without believing in God at all. You can. And so a lot of people will look at religion, Christianity, and say, why do I need it? Because they think religion is just about morality. It's just about behavior modification. Hey, I can do it without that. I don't need to do any of that. I can believe in God even and not even deal with religion. I mean, I don't need the guilt trip. I don't need this. I don't need that. I don't need the rules. I don't need anybody telling me how to live or what to do. And I'm telling you, like I said 2 weeks ago, Christianity is not a religion at all. Because it's not about that. And when we're talking today about our difference, it's not about morality per se up front. It's about belonging to God, first and foremost of all. It's much more. Here's an illustration. Imagine a mother raises her son to be moral, you know? And he says to her son time and again throughout his life, hey, I want you to always remember the poor and to work hard and be honest at all times. And he learns these lessons really well. And she sacrifices for him. She does so much for him. She shows him how to be good to the poor and the people around her, and she's giving in that way, and she works hard and diligently, and she is honest with him about all things, and she works so hard that she pays for his whole college education. He graduates without a debt, gets a wonderful job, and he calls her up on the phone and says, hey, thank you so much, Mom, and now I'm not going to be around you much because, well, I'll send you a Christmas card. Maybe a birthday present, but don't expect me around at all. And she goes, why, honey? And he goes, hey, I can be moral. In fact, you taught me very well. I can be moral without you. I remember the poor, and I am hardworking, and I'm honest, just like I am right now, so I don't need you. What would you think of that son? He's moral. You'd be outraged, right? You'd go like, what? That's not just about morale. It's about the relationship. How much more with our God? It's about the relationship. Holiness, actually all the ethics in the New Testament, in the Bible, I can't find a place where it isn't about relationships. It isn't about community. It isn't about our relationship to God and our relationship to others. It's not about me being moral in myself or meeting some type of a abstract standard. It's always how I love others, how I serve others, how I care about others, how I serve God, how I respond to His goodness and grace in my life. This goes all the way back to even the Ten Commandments. Do you realize the first word God spoke is not even a command when He spoke them? In Exodus chapter 20, He says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He's saying, I am yours and you are mine. You belong to me. And that's the basis of everything. And that's what made them holy. Because they were no different than anyone else outside of the fact that God had called them and committed Himself to them. As He, by His grace, committed Himself to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which if you look at their lives, they were not that great of people. Not different from, Jacob was a trickster. Isaac, we can't tell, I mean, the scriptures don't even have him doing much. And Abraham was an idolater before God called him. And then he made all sorts of mistakes along the way. And yet God had chosen and said, you are mine and I am yours. And unlike saying I am the God of power and might and wisdom and strength and all of this stuff, or I'm the God of the powerful or rich, or I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Do you understand how powerful that is? How amazing that grace is that He would identify with weak, frail human beings, with you and me, because we're just like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? That's what's going on here. It's all about that relationships. You belong to God. And that's what makes you different. And because we belong together, I don't just live for myself. For instance, there are some people in my life, my wife, my children, my mother, my brother, my sister. There are people that I would say I belong to them, right? Now, there are a lot of moral things I can do in this world, but I've chosen not to do some of them, even though I am free to do them, because it's about the relationship with these specific individuals. And so my life is different, not simply trying to follow certain rules, but my life is different because I belong to my son and my daughter and my wife and my mother. You get it? That's what it means to be holy. You belong. You belong to God. Now, how is that really different? How does that work out to be different? Maybe the best way to say it, and I've kind of hinted at it already, is this. If belonging to God, what's the opposite of belonging to God? And that is living for yourself. So out in California, when I was pastor in Visalia, there was a high school across the street from the church, Mount Whitney High School. Mount Whitney is the highest point in the 48 states, and it wasn't, you couldn't see it from where we were, but it was only like 50 miles away, but it was close, right? And so Mount Whitney High School, a couple thousand students, and after school one day, I took a video camera, you know, one of those big digital video recorders at that time. Some of you have never even seen these things, right? But I took a video camera because I was working with youth, and I asked this question of high school students if they'd stop and do this kind of street interview. The one question I asked was simply this: to whom do you belong? You can imagine some of the responses, right? First of all, most people looked at me stunned. what do you mean? Right? What do you mean? I'm an American. I don't belong to any. I belong, or some people would say, I belong to myself. Really? Oh, that's interesting. Or some were reluctant to say, I belong to my parents. They get to tell me what to do. But most people didn't know how to respond to that because most of the time we have been indoctrinated since childhood in our culture to believe that we are autonomous, independent individuals who, in a sense, created ourselves, which I don't understand how we can ever think that. But somehow I chose to come to life. I chose to have the life I have, and everything is about me, and I am totally free and independent of anyone. And that is such malarkey. But you understand how if you live that way, what it's like? That's what Peter says in this, is the futile way of life that has been handed down by our forefathers. To live for yourself. To do what I want to do when I want to do it, and nobody can tell me the blankety blank how I should live. Do you understand that? And Peter says, no, you belong to God, and that makes all the difference. And Paul would say the same thing. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price. Glorify God in your body. You live not for your own sake to do whatever you want anymore. You are living for God and for the sake of your neighbors and friends and family and others around you. And this goes across the board. This is so basic in the understanding of the New Testament. So like a book like Ephesians chapter, Ephesians 6, where Paul's kind of laying this out, he says, no matter where you are in the hierarchies and structures of this world, whether you're the boss or the employee, whether you are male or female, whether you're a child, how old you are, how you fit, whether you're free or a slave, even in that society. What he will say is, you, since you belong to God, you don't live for yourself and you don't work just for your boss. You are always working for God and for the sake of others. You know how different that is? So that means, see, if I'm just working for my boss, then I'm only working when my boss is around. Right? Cat's away, the mice will play. You've heard that before, right? Watch out. The boss is here. Look busy. I only work for my boss, and I do it grudgingly, whether she or he is on my case and setting up the goals. That's only when I get things done. But if I'm understanding that I am serving God, that I'm glorifying God, then whether my boss is there or not, whether she or he is pushing me or not, I'm going to conscientiously and thoroughly work because I'm working for the Lord and serving Him through that. And that's the same in my neighborhood, in my relationships, everything. So I am, in a sense, totally free to serve God, but I am totally making myself a servant to others for their sake and not just living for myself. And that's how the New Testament talks about your relationships now in the structures and hierarchies of this world. You don't treat people the way they treat you. You treat them the way God wants you to treat them. And that's a huge difference. And it becomes very evident in this world that's all about, you know, getting away with whatever and only doing what I have to do and getting as much out of the system as I can. We're not living that way anymore. But you might just say, well, why would I work so hard? Why would I live that way? Why be different? Why be different? Well, first of all, why do you want to be normal? I just kind of shared a little what normal's like. Normal is exploiting other people. Have you noticed that? We've seen lately, I think, thankfully, in my estimation, that women finally who have faced sexual harassment or uncomfortableness are speaking up and saying, hey, normal has been, we've been exploited, we've been used, we've been touched and prodded and poked and talked about and objectified in so many different ways. That's what's normal in this world. It's not, it's any power relationship that's been normal. You want to be normal? I don't want to be normal. Normal is living for yourself and buying into what everybody thinks you have to have so that you go massively in debt and then you're stressed about it. Normal is broken relationships. Normal is anxieties and fears all over the place because I'm not quite able to fit in and live up to the standards of those around me. That is normal. Do you really want to be normal these days? But it's not just that normal is bad and different is good. No. It's that God has chosen a better path for you. Peter says you can be different because God has ransomed you. Ransomed you. Back in that passage of 1 Peter, he says, knowing you were ransomed from the futile way of life inherited from your forefathers. And he says, how? Not with gold and silver, that's perishable, but with the precious blood of Jesus Christ. I don't know how that impacts me so often, you know? If God would say, throw $1 trillion at the problems that he sees in this world, he would do it if it solved anything, first of all. Secondly, though, it wouldn't cost him that much because he owns it all anyways. Do you understand? He can make more. He can make more. He could throw all sorts of things at you. And most people, that's all they're looking from God for is stuff, created things. But do you know what God gives to you? Something that costs him. Not something he made, but something that was unmade. The precious blood of Jesus Christ, a lamb without blemish or spot, the one who was before the foundations of the world, it says, the one who was uncreated, his very own son. When God ever reveals himself, speaks to us, does anything throughout the scriptures, he's always giving the greatest gift, which is himself. He's always giving self away, himself. Stuff, no problem. He can make more. But the thing he wants to give you is himself. Like I said, he's the Father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's your God, he's my God. He says, you belong to me, but he also says, I am your God, I belong to you. That's why be different. Jesus, when he was approaching his death and crucifixion, he prays this extremely intimate, personal, intense, passionate, and simple worded prayer in John chapter 17. And in it he says to the Father, and for their sake I consecrate myself, that they also may be sanctified in truth. And that word there for consecrate and sanctified is that word for holy. Jesus didn't do what he wanted to do and live whatever way he wanted. He set himself apart. He knew he belonged, in a sense, to the Father that way, that God the Father could use him for his purposes to do what nobody else would do and to live the way nobody else would live and to give what nobody else would give. And it brought him to the holy sacrifice of his own life so that he lost everything for your sake and mine. God has ransomed you, redeemed you. And to the degree that you realize what Jesus did, to the degree you understand the depth of how he set himself apart for your sake and not for his. To the degree you see what God spent on you lavishly, to that degree, you'll be able to respond to the call to be holy and not feel it's a burden or you got to follow the rules or it's about, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that and I better not do that. And da, 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 da. You'll respond in a loving relationship to him. Do you realize you don't become holy? You are holy because of what God has done. And you don't behave yourself into belonging or behave yourself into holiness. God calls you into that first and foremost of all. Your behaviors then follow the reality of what God has already done for you so that you are holy, set apart, belonging to God. I think so many people try to fit into this world. And God has called you to stand out and to be different. You don't need to try to fit in. You've got everything the world is looking for, acceptance and peace and security, already given to you freely without cost to you at great cost to God in Jesus Christ. So you can be different and you can stand out and you will stand out not by just, you know, somehow you look different, but you will be so different, people will look at you and go like, wait a minute, I'm not used to this motivation. I'm not used to, what? You're living for something beyond what I can tell. So in my message notes here in the YouVersion of the Bible, you can look them up. There's three questions I'd love for you to take home and to really kind of simmer on this week and apply, okay? Three different questions. The first of these is this. What are the three areas I struggle most trying to fit in? Okay? And be honest with yourself. Why are you trying to fit in so much when you've already belonged to God? And what is it that you struggle with? And let God have that and realize what you've been given already in him. Now, the second way is, what are the biggest ways that I'm different from the world already? And that's something you can celebrate, the fact that God has made you different, that you are different and you aren't fitting in already. And we want to celebrate those things. And maybe the third one is even the most profound, and that is, what is the area that God wants me to be different? Right now that I'm too normal, that I'm still fitting in with how everything is, that I'm letting control me. What is the biggest area God is showing me right now that I need to still be different in? Because we don't just come to church to listen to messages and we don't just sing a few songs and go like, wow, that was nice. We want to be doers of the word. We want it to actually involve our lives and make a difference. So you belong. That has been one of our taglines here, and we really mean it. You belong here. You belong to God. He belongs to you. God is thrilled to have you. And he wants to make a difference in your life and you to make a difference in this world. So as we think about those questions in this whole message, I think it's time to pray. So